And thank you, Kate Dean, for now joining us on this edition of Filter. Kate, can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Kate. I think the last time I talked to you on the phone was also on Filter as well, probably.
I believe so.
It's funny because I actually...
nobody talks on the phone anymore.
Nobody does, right? Yeah, I talked to my old friend Eric Peterson a few weeks back, and I hadn't talked to him for like 6 years, and we only talked on Filter, and we basically just caught up on the air, which, you know, sometimes I'm like, and George and I kind of had this conversation, we're like, huh, is this just like totally like self-indulgent nonsense that we're doing here? But it feels good, right? And if it feels good, we should do it. Is that how the saying goes?
Yeah, and hopefully it will have, you know, some value to the listening public as well.
I encourage you, if you don't find any value in the show, to write me an email. And also, if you're going to write Kate Dean hate mail, please write it to me instead. And I will take it. So just divert any antipathy you have towards Kate Dean onto me. And you're welcome, Kate. I want to say, as always, this show is my opinion alone. It's not KPTZ's. KPTZ is an independent, apolitical organization, that has nothing to do with the garbage that comes out of my mouth. I don't know, Kate, if you want a disclaimer, you know, you could disclaim. Do you want to disclaim with me?
I don't think I need to disclaim, but I will say that we're not discouraging democracy. I'm certainly open to feedback from the public, even though I appreciate your efforts to protect me.
It was more like, you know, it was like you got enough, right? You got your quota. And like, I kind of like, maybe there's moments, God, oh, am I about to like, maybe there's moments where I kind of like want to be hated, you know, like, but maybe I shouldn't take that too far or follow that too far. It's the pro wrestling heel in me that, you know, that sometimes wants to just earn the ire of the crowd, in order to, you know, get a big pop for the face, for the good guy in the wrestling match.
So I think you do that pretty successfully in your day-to-day life, Paul.
Let's just do a show about me, Kate. Let's talk about me. What do you guys think about me? Send me an email. My email is kdean@co.co. Oh, man. Hey, congratulations. You have been reelected, right?
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, it's the first time a woman will ever serve 2 terms as Jefferson County Commissioner. We are like in the dark ages, even in terms of like, you know, compared to other counties in the state, we've never had a woman serve more than 1 term. It's crazy. So it feels like an accomplishment.
That's wild. You know, I mean, do you think there's a reason for that? Like, or is it just sort of like how it's worked out? Or is it just sexism pretty much?
I don't know, because arguably other counties have just as much sexism. I would like to think that we're on the progressive end of that spectrum, as we are on most as far as county governments go. But yeah, we were really late in electing our first women commissioners. That's been in the time that I lived in Jefferson County. And then having them stick around has been even harder. So,
and the first was Kathleen?
Nope. The first was Wendy Wrinkle, and that's when I was living in District 3, so maybe in early 2000s. And she only lasted a short time. A woman replaced her to finish off until the next election, so 2 very short-term women in that position. And then Kathleen was the first to complete 1 term, and then she did not seek re-election. So it's surprising, but we will go back to having a women majority with Heidi Eisenhower joining in District 2. And I will just say, I was told, I haven't verified this, but that I got more votes for a commissioner position than anyone ever has in our county. So I am very grateful for the support of this community.
Did that mean that some Republicans might have voted for you?
Who knows? I won't guess, but I will say that the really high turnout of this election, and of course being uncontested, was, you know, primarily led to that.
That helps. But I've seen you stepping across the aisle. I mean, I have friends who are conservative in Port Townsend who really, really hide it because they know that they just do not want to be exposed to the echo chamber echoing against them, right? But I know mm-hmm. that those folks have seen a lot of the work you've done crossing the aisle, whatever that means, but at least just being open to conversation, you know? And it seems like you've really made that kind of a feature of yourself as your legislative person and kind of your, I don't know, what do they say you develop as a politician? Like, not a mandate.
Cynicism?
Yeah. I mean, yes.
Laziness?
Well, you don't have that. I mean, you can, you might think you do. You probably think you could do more, but, I mean, from everything that I see, you're just constantly in motion. I mean, how did you even have time to get married to Rico Kidendongo?
It's been a big month.
I mean, it's crazy. You got reelected. We unelected Trump. You got married. And now you have to come.
My dog died.
I know. And I want to talk about Kira. I let's talk about that now, because I mean, that's a major thing that, you know, when I was thinking about you and feeling for you, I just realized that, I mean, that never goes away. You know, we never lose that feeling of the love of our pets, but, you know, also the grief, you know, the grief stays with us forever, just like if someone we loved and was super close died.
Mm-hmm. I've been really surprised to hear people's story of grieving animals. And I've lost animals before, but mostly like farm pets, and they always had a job and they were self-sufficient and would go, you know, off into the woods and die. And this is the first time I've ever had to put an animal down, and hearing the just the way that people talk about it, it is kind of profound. I mean, I think just the nature of those relationships are so unique and so uncomplicated by, you know, all of our human imperfections. Like, it's just pure, the simple pure love, and it's so hard to suddenly be without it.
Can you,
kind of shocking.
Can you tell us the story of Kira up until the recent passing?
Sure. She was a funny dog, and she came to me as an older dog, and I was at a kind of a lonely time in my life, and my kids were at an age where it seemed like they would benefit from having another little companion around, and so she came into our lives. She had been a surfing dog. Like, she, in her younger days, could actually ride waves.
Wow.
Yeah, so really.
By herself?
I don't know. I'm not sure if she would just do it with her previous owner. But she is a healer, and that breed is kind of intense and gets more intense with age. And so she came to us and just was, like, so fiercely loyal, which kind of turned into being a little bit too protective of me and not bonding with the kids. But it meant that she and I were incredibly close, and I couldn't go anywhere without her being by my side. I never needed a leash. I could carry one around just to be a good citizen, but, she was just glued to my side and, you know, intuiting everything I felt. And, she was brilliant, but she got really grumpy, the last year or two. And it was a real challenge for me to just totally accept her as she was and love her anyway. And, you know, she kept loving me just in this kind of grumpier, stubborn way. And, I learned a lot from, like, just, you know, knowing that I wasn't going to change her, because people, you still think maybe I can change them, or if I act differently, they're going to act differently. And she wasn't going to do that. She had no interest.
Right.
So I just had to meet her there and love her up. And she loved me in return, just in her, you know, grumpy way.
So is that the longest time you've ever had a companion dog?
No, because I only had her for just over 3 years.
Oh, okay.
So she was maybe, we don't know how old she was, 15 or 16 when she died, but in her senior years. But she still, we went to the beach every day. She ran, even the day before she died, she was running, fetching sticks at the beach.
Yeah, because you had a little, she had a turnaround, right? Because she was really moving slow. And I remember you asked social media, you know, when is the right time to do this? And that generated a really interesting conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's sort of where, you know, the all these feelings come from, you know, and realizing all the stories people have around this, you know. And I was in my family, my parents owned a farm a long time ago, and, you know, had farm dogs hit by cars and, you know, other things, you know. And their rule, you know, we had dogs constantly growing up, and their rule was always, you know, if you pee while you're sitting down, you know, or you go to the bathroom, you know, while you're sitting down, you know, and you don't bother to get up to do it, then it's time to say goodbye. And I didn't share that on the post because I was like, I don't want to talk about this really. Like, I'm not ready. I was like, I think I was feeling it back. So, but then you had the turnaround, right? And you're like, ah, maybe things will go on for a little bit longer. And that's not what happened.
Yeah, although she had like 3 days where she was perky and happy, and we went to the beach every day, and she was back to her old self. And then just Tuesday of this week, she woke up that morning. Oh no, was up all night and just went downhill very quickly. And a number of people said that's not unusual, and that people do that too. Actually, they'll have a kind of a burst of energy before they pass. But I will just put in a plug. We're very lucky to have a vet who moved to town fairly recently who does home euthanization even during COVID. And it was the most beautiful way to honor her life. And just feel so lucky to have someone so compassionate to be there for the animal and for the family in that time. Such a gift.
I was talking to a friend about this, you know, because it brought back for me my, you know, I had this beagle growing up. We had a lot of dogs, but then at one point when I was like maybe 12 or something, my parents, you know, let me choose the next dog after the previous dog died. They're like, well, let Paul choose. And they were used to having labs and, you know, mostly labs, when, you know, Australian Shepherd. But they let Paul choose. And Paul was like, well, I'll get a beagle. And they're like, what? You're going to get a tiny beagle dog? Like, it was, I think it weirded them out, but they didn't, you know, they had given me the autonomy to make the choice. So they were like, okay, you know, and of course
you chose the loudest breed possible.
Yeah. I didn't know it was the loudest breed. I don't even remember how I chose a beagle. I think I just liked the name because I don't know that much about dogs. You know, I do love dogs. I don't know a lot about breeds or anything. And I don't remember what my criteria was for choosing a beagle. But
they're adorable.
They're super adorable. And this guy, Jackson, he was the runt of the litter and the last one left. Nobody else had wanted him. And he came over and sat in my lap and he peed in my lap. So I guess that breaks the whole peeing, you know, other role. But he was a puppy. And I was like, that's him. That's him. You know, I've totally, it was like the getting peed on has never been such a happy event. Well, you know, unless maybe you're our president, all views are mine. Yeah, so, you know, took him home and had, you know, it's like 14 years of life and he finally, you know, couldn't hack it anymore when I was 25, around 24, 25. No, and I was like, you know, I'd come back from college. I was done with school. And I told myself when he was that sick, I was like, I need to be there when he dies, you know? I need to see what that's like. Cause we had had dogs euthanize them before, but as a kid, I was too scared to go and I was too sad, you know? And yeah. I remember, one dog, Tora, she was sick and they were taking her away in the back of the Volvo. And I just remember my little self, like I was bringing her all the milk bones that I was just bringing her tons of milk bones because it didn't matter anymore, you know? And I had always I always wanted to be the one who gave Tora milk bones, but my parents wouldn't let me, they would hold me back. But on that day when they were taking her away, they're like, sure, Paul, you can give her as many milk bones as you want.
Was she even eating at that point?
No, she just sniffed at them. But you know, so I'd never really been there for it. And, you know, probably for good reason, I went with Jackson and, you know, being there in the moment obviously was important. And I hugged him and it was, you know, I still remember the color of the liquid going in and it was traumatic. It was actually traumatic in some ways. And since then, I haven't wanted to get a dog at all.
Yeah.
Like I love other people's dogs, but it's like. And I'm not saying my bond is more special, but it was like, it was traumatic. And I cried about this when I was talking to when I was talking about it, you know, and I was like, wow, this is like 14 years later and it still feels like devastating. So it really brought back some stuff for me that I didn't normally think about. And I always kind of like pushed it off like, ah, that's not, you know, but it's so important and it's so real.
Yeah. I've gone back and forth of feeling that I want to get another cute puppy like today. And feeling like I'll never have another dog again because I can't imagine going through that sadness.
Yeah. I mean, is it worth it? Like, I guess that's one of it's a real question. Like, I know some people would just say, of course it's worth it. But I have to ask myself, is it worth it? Is it worth it for me? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I've decided in the meantime what I want to do is just be available to help other people if they have temperamental dogs. There were a couple people who came into Kira's life who didn't want her to be like cuddly and sweet, who just let her be who she was. And they were our house sitters, Kim Carver and Douglas Francisco, both loved Kira just as she was. And they feel like kind of angels in our life. And I want to offer that now to people who have dogs that other people don't want to help out with because they're too cranky.
Yeah.
It's welcome at my house.
You can start a service.
Yes. Cranky dogs only.
Cranky dogs only. I'm used to it. It won't affect me much.
Right.
Well, and it also maybe, I mean, did you find it a challenge having a dog and having to go, I mean, pretty much work all day, all weekdays, drive endless hours to bike in your case so many times? Were you able to balance it?
Yeah, with help from family and Doug Townsend and travel for work was hard, but good house sitters. But that's mostly where I feel like I can't get another dog is I have too many other responsibilities. So
yeah, you're our number one elected. And by number one, I mean district number one.
Oh, thank you. I do. I would love to get your take on kind of how we recover from this contentious election, though.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to talk about that. Let's actually throw in our musical break here. You brought us a song. Do you want to introduce it?
Sure. So this song, it's called Hey Snow White by the New Pornographers. It popped up one time when I was driving to or from Olympia, and I go there a lot during legislative session, and I just found this song really empowering. I often feel like kind of a country bumpkin when I'm down there, and especially with county commissioners, which is mostly older dudes, a lot of Republicans, and it's hard for me to find my voice. And I've gotten better at it and, you know, feel pretty proud to be a very, very rare female Democrat from a rural area that's like a unicorn in Olympia. But this song became something I could listen to and kind of charge myself up to find my voice and be, you know, just solidly be who I was and carry that with pride into Olympia.
All right. Well, let's rock it. Hey, Snow White by the New Pornographers. We're talking to Kate Dean, District 1 County Commissioner for Jefferson County. And we'll be back to talk about the election. Woohoo! Was it all right? Was it all right, Kate?
Yeah. It's the legislature is an interesting place. You know, I don't know if people know, legislators get paid very little money, which means that the people who can afford to have that job generally are independently wealthy. A few of them still have jobs, but you have to be able to leave your job for like could be 3 months at the beginning of the year. It could stretch into 6 months like it did a couple of years ago. How many of those jobs exist? So you end up with a lot of legislators who, you know, are kind of have enough money that they can devote themselves to. Often, you know, they'll choose one pet issue that they're really passionate about and get elected. And I don't find it the most inspiring place to work, even though, you know, that's how we make state laws and it's an important place. But
do you think there's a way to, well, I mean, paying people more obviously would make the playing field open to more people running for these positions.
From what I've heard, we're in an awkward spot of not being a big enough state to have a full-time legislature. So we have a part-time legislature, which is why they get paid so little. And you can imagine when we were all farmers, it made sense, right?
Right.
Go in the, go to Olympia in the winter and get your work done and then come back to the farm. But we know that's not the world we live in anymore. But, you know, who wants to advocate for much bigger government,
right,
too? Going full-time would be a much bigger structure. So it's, I think we're in like a teenage phase, awkward teenage phase.
Yeah. Well, we just need to instate an income tax and remove all other taxes. And that income tax would probably cover a nice pay bump for legislators and maybe open up the field for some fresh blood.
Yeah, I am. I'm not going to be the one advocating for, you know, increasing elected politicians' wages right now, because that's a pretty hot topic. But I do agree on the income tax. When you think about the enormous amount of wealth being created, especially in the I-5 corridor right now, and that the state can, you know, barely cash in on that.
Did you see that Gene Simmons is moving to Washington?
No.
Yeah, Gene Simmons from KISS is moving to Washington because our tax structure is very beneficial to him. And all the KISS guys are super Trumpers, too.
Wow. So
it's like, yeah, the Washington, the secret of Washington is that if you make a lot of money, you're probably going to pay less taxes here.
Yeah. Bizarre, given our politics, it just doesn't align.
Right. Well, and the whole just the dissonance that it takes to advocate against an income tax, while we have a completely regressive tax structure that is forced to tax in all these different ways just to provide basic services.
Exactly, the most regressive of the 50 states.
It's lunacy. The most, yeah. Let's not mince words. The most regressive tax structure in these United States, Washington State. You win.
Yeah.
You know, soda tax, latte tax, and yeah. But let's talk about things we. Well, I was going to say let's talk about things we can control, but I can't control this either. I voted. Did you vote?
Of course, I voted.
Okay, and did you vote Biden or Trump?
I voted for Biden.
All right.
No question.
Yeah.
You know, I was elected the first time the night that Trump was elected. And you know this, Paul, I have felt, you know, kind of chained to him. My entire career at the county now has been, you know, dreading getting an email from any federal agency. Just like, what's next? And feel like in order to make progress, it's in spite of the federal government. And I, you know, I travel to D.C. regularly. There's a lot of things we rely on from the feds at the county level. And at every step, it has felt like, oh, what now? How can they make this harder? So the thought of being aligned with the federal administration is really exciting.
And it will happen, right? We will get a Biden administration?
I guarantee it.
Oh, you're going to guarantee it? Oh man, that feels good. That feels good. Yeah, you know, cause I've been actually really optimistic and happy, and I've had friends who were like messaging me and being like, "Why are you so optimistic? What's wrong with you? Don't you know that we are living in that like Mandela universe where Berenstain Bears became Berenstain Bears? You know that we went off some kind of cliff in the multiverse, and we're no longer in the greatest of all possible worlds. We're in some other dark place." And I can't with that cynicism right now. Like I needed a W, you know, I needed a win, and I feel like we got a win. And of course Trump is not conceding, because his entire brand is built around not conceding and ignoring the truth, ignoring reality. You know, all opinions my own, like it's absolutely based on denial, and different kinds of denial. So of course he's not conceding. And I keep hearing,
I think it's more than just denial though. I mean, like, and my problem with his administration has largely been a disregard for the the democracy that we have. And, you know, that comes through in so many ways. And of course, now in an election that he lost by millions of votes, he's going to continue down that path. But as someone who, you know, I mean, I went to grad school as a single mother working full time to study government before I ran for office. Like, I care very deeply that the systems we have are full of integrity. And it's so maddening to see, to be elected the same night this guy was and have him just have zero regard for our history, for our Constitution, for even just the norms, you know, not to mention the laws, but the norms of how we do things. That's important. That matters. This is actually like part of the infrastructure of our society. So, sorry, yeah. I interrupted
no,
you.
No, please interrupt.
I have feelings about this.
How dare you interrupt me? You're the boss, Kate. You can interrupt whenever you want.
It's your show, Paul.
Yeah.
More about you. Let's go back to you.
Oh, God. Okay. So for breakfast, I actually ate leftover Penny Saver pizza. Yeah, at like 7 in the morning.
You gotta talk about your diet,
Paul. I washed it down with a rock star.
No, this is going to catch up with you. You can't do this. I'm just enough older than you that I can say this.
I know. Yeah. I'll get on top of it. My life's kind of in flux right now, so I'm letting myself revert a little bit. But I feel like there's part of me that's like, yeah, okay, you've reverted enough, guy. You need to like just like shore up the lines here. Cause I mean, at the beginning of the summer, I was like losing weight. I was hiking all the time. So see, you invited me to talk about myself. Now everyone's like, okay, good. Paul's talking about himself again.
I think we need to, let's just put out a shout out that people should drop off like healthy casseroles at Paul's house.
Yeah.
Paul needs a little support in the vegetable department.
I cook healthy when it's me and the girls. I think I make them mostly healthy food. That's the only time I cook, but I just, when I'm on my own, I haven't been cooking. I've been eating mostly like frozen meals and takeout. I just spent 6 years cooking almost every meal and I was like, oh yeah, I'm kind of done with that right now. Like,
yeah,
but it's like, but that's sort of like it's just something, you know, it'll get tied up as my life settles down. Really like what you were taking me back to that night when Trump won, because I was so excited for you and I went to the courthouse and we were celebrating, but I was looking at my stupid phone and seeing the reality, you know, I mean, what, you know, you winning gives me hope. You winning then gave me hope. And then it was like, you know, to have to go through this, you know, literal constitutional crisis, different kinds for 4 years. And then to have that be temporary, you know, we're all scared of like a soft coup right now, but I don't think we're celebrating enough just how important the victory is, you know. And at first I was really upset that it wasn't a landslide, but then, you know, as the results have been coming in and the next day you begin to see that it's like, well, of course, you know, like it's not a landslide, because, you know, there are definitely able to turn out a bunch of voters and the GOP has kind of been creating this base for a long time. Trump's just the natural leader for it. So of course they're out there. It still says that democracy works. It still says that we're not, you know, so easily taken by a strongman dictator who would just basically be a narcissistic demagogue for our country and drag us deep into the pit. I mean, that I want to be hopeful about that, because it does feel like a victory, and I don't think we talk about it. We're so like intent on him conceding, right? But we don't talk about it as a victory enough right now, for my taste.
Yeah, I think the hard part to reconcile, though, is that, you know, so many Americans still voted for him. Here it was 25% Jefferson County voters. And, you know, I know for me that the victory is tainted by the feeling of, oh, but we're so divided. And I don't mean that in a pat way, and in part because it's my job to represent everyone in Jefferson County. So I feel an actual sadness of like, I'm not sure where our values align. And I know that's part of the divisiveness too, that we have all built narratives that that perpetuate that. And I'm really interested. And I think the whole Democratic Party nationwide is dealing with this exact thing of, you know, do we try to come more towards the center in recognition that that we have to heal, or do we hold more firmly to our positions at the extremes in hopes that, you know, righteous victory will reign upon us? And even on the very local level, which arguably my position shouldn't even be partisan, but it is. But it worries me. And we have seen a lot of divisiveness within our own community. And, you know, on pretty much every issue, I'm getting hate mail from both sides. So
interesting.
So I'm you know, just devouring anything I can about kind of how to start thinking about rebuilding trust in our communities. And it's daunting.
Do you think there's hope?
I genuinely want help. Like, I genuinely want people to come with ideas of how do we start having conversations that don't devolve into this finger-pointing moral high ground. And because I think we just need new ways of engaging in democracy, which is, of course, even harder with COVID, too.
Do you feel like there's hope for folks who are caught in this spell of, I don't know, it's like a rhetorical spell about the, with a different set of facts about how our country works and what's happening in our country? You know, I mean, this has been my thing, is how do you appeal to those people? How do you appeal to people who look at the world in a fundamentally different way than you do, which is, you know, more true than ever in our polarized nation?
Mm-hmm. And knowing that they're looking at you, scratching their head in exactly the same way.
How could you not see that Soros controls everything?
Well, and when do you hold to absolute truths? You know, I mean, and for me, an absolute truth is that white supremacy must be faced. We must own up to our nation's history and current power structure, where people of color are still not afforded the same opportunities, are faced with danger and hatred. You know, so that, like, that's a non-negotiable. And so when I think about 71 million Americans voting for a president who wouldn't denounce that, it's really hard to find the middle ground. Like, we shouldn't compromise on that.
Yeah, I agree. Before we run out of time, give us one major legislative, or, you know, even if it's not legislative, priority for you in Jefferson County in your next 4-year term.
It's so unsexy.
Do it. I don't care. I love unsexy.
To talk about the Port Hedlock sewer.
Oh, man. Oh, no, that's not unsexy to me. Oh,
good. Yeah, I think it is the most exciting thing we could see in Jefferson County, which is ironic because we will never see it. You know, I mean, I'm going to devote my career to this thing that we will never think about or see. And a lot of people in Port Townsend don't understand kind of the regional importance of this. And, you know, we devote county dollars, and let's remember the city and the city taxpayers are part of the county. We devote taxpayer dollars to this project, and that benefits everyone. When we can get that sewer built, which we are desperately seeking funding for all the time, and have had some success, not nearly as much as we had hoped, but we're still working on it. That will allow for greater density to be built in that part of the county, in Port Hedlock itself. Will not be required to hook up right away. We're not going to be requiring homeowners who, you know, can barely pay their bills to be hooking up. But it will allow for density, for affordable housing, for jobs, for businesses to be able to grow, meaning more jobs. I mean, it is really the one thing we could do in this county to improve a number of metrics. And so that's going to continue to be my number one priority.
Well, that's exciting for me because that's, you know, I mean, that is the only way that Hedlock and, you know, there's other UGAs outside of Port Townsend are really going to be able to experience the growth that we need to sustain, the population that is living here and struggling.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And we know that Port Townsend's going to be more and more expensive and desirable. So we need somewhere else to capture that density. And with the Growth Management Act, we cannot provide that. We cannot provide that density until the urban level of services are in, which now means sewer. So it's the silver bullet. And happy to talk about it at length with anyone who would like to. I can geek out on the sewer all day long.
Well, we've talked. Congratulations, Kate, on your wedding, first of all. Congratulations on your reelection, and much respects and regards for the loss of dear Kira.
Thank you.
And hopefully next time we talk, it'll be about how the sewer is actually, well, no, because that'll probably take some time. But let's have a sewer episode, you know, let's have a sewer episode soon. Maybe we can get Craig Durgan on here too.
Yeah, it's a great idea, because I think there's a lot of education. People don't quite understand how valuable it is to everyone in the county.
Well, thank you, Kate, and we'll talk to you again in the next couple months, I hope.
Thank you, Paul. Stay safe, stay healthy.
You too. Bye-bye.